Chapter 28. Carl fired me. I took the news well, considering I needed the job to cover such luxuries as rent. Mostly it was a relief to leave the loud, chaotic space of Quincy Market, where Mr. Petrocelli's ugly words still tainted the night. Even Bella was subdued, walking obediently beside me as we left Faneuil Hall, crossing into the familiar territory of Columbus Park. The Harborside Park was small compared to other Boston green spaces, but it offered a water fountain that kept the kids giggling and wet during the summer, while the adults lounged in the grass or beneath the shade of the long wooden trellis. There was a playground, a rose garden, and a small reflecting fountain where the homeless kept vigil. Sometimes, before my Starbucks shift, I'd bring Bella here to run around with her North End neighbors, an informal puppy play group. I'd stand to the side of the gathered humans while the dogs frolicked. Too cold and wet for children now. Too late for dogs or community gatherings. The homeless slept on the benches. The barflies passed briskly through, mindful of the misty weather as they exchanged Faneuil Hall haunts for North End eateries. Other than that, the park was quiet. I found myself thinking of the note again. Return the locket, or another girl will die. Was there a young child in bed right now? Maybe tucked in with her favorite stuffed dog and a pink fleecy blanket? Did she trust her parents to keep her safe, believe nothing could happen to her inside her own home? He would walk across her lawn, heavy metal crowbar slapping against his thigh. He would tuck himself somewhere out of sight, maybe a tree or bush. Then he would inch along the side of the house until he came to her window, lifting the crowbar, going to work on the window sash. I pressed the heels of my hands against my eyeballs, as if that would make the images go away. I felt dipped in ugliness, suffocated by violence. 25 years later, I still couldn't escape. I didn't want to think about Mr. Petrocelli's words. I didn't want to think about the threat left on the windshield of Dee Dee's car. The past was the past. I was a grown adult. I'd lived in the city for over 10 years. Why would the boogeyman suddenly return now, demanding my old locket, threatening new victims? It didn't make any sense. Mr. Petrocelli was insane, a bitter, crazy man who'd never gotten over the terrible loss of his daughter. Of course he blamed my father, saved him all sorts of parental guilt. As for Bobby and Dee Dee's allegations, they had never met my dad. They didn't know him the way I did, how he could sink his teeth into a problem like a pit bull, refusing to let go. Obviously, Catherine had information he wanted. In that case, it would have made sense to my father to pass himself off as an FBI agent. Normal fathers probably did not do such things, but they probably didn't move their families to Florida just because the police wouldn't call in the National Guard to look for a peeping Tom. And as for my father's brief disappearance shortly after we moved to Florida, no doubt there were loose ends to tidy up. Closing out bank accounts, putting things into storage. Except, of course, he could have closed out the bank accounts before we left, and apparently he'd arranged for the moving company by phone. I didn't want to go there. My father was obsessive, paranoid, and systematic. That still did not mean he was a killer. Except maybe he wasn't even Russell Granger. My temples started to throb again, the beginnings of a first-class headache that he had started 25 years ago, and now threatened to go on without end. I didn't know what to do. I just wished. Hello. The voice startled me so badly I squeaked, twirled, and nearly fell. A strong hand grabbed my arm, held me upright. Bella barked excitedly as I belatedly turned around to discover the old man from Boston State Mental standing beside me. Charlie Marvin. Bella barked louder. Far from being concerned, Charlie simply bent down and held out his hand.